And folks, now we're going to have It's Your Health. And we have two lovely ladies on the line with us this morning, and they are Ida Zelaya, who'll be interviewing Kathleen Morris. Welcome to the program, ladies.
Good morning. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Oh, wonderful. Hi, Kathleen.
Good morning.
Good morning, good morning. Like Dave said, this is Ida Zelaya of SensoryStreet.com sitting in for the vivacious and ever so driven Lisa Davis, the host of It's Your Health Radio. Lisa will be back at the 10 o'clock hour after Kathleen and after Kathleen's interview to talk about an interesting book about Asperger's syndrome and a dad who was diagnosed with Asperger's just a few days after his little son was. So stay tuned for that. But now on the lineup is Kathleen Morris, the founder of National Sensory Awareness Month, which is coming up in just a few moments in October. During the month of October, to honor National Sensory Awareness Month, here on It's Your Health Radio, we have a fabulous lineup of some of the most recognized people in the sensory integration field. So check itsyourhealthradio.org for the upcoming shows on that. And with me, yes, is Kathleen Morris, founder of National Sensory Awareness Month, and a whole lot more. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Ida.
Oh, gosh, I have such a long list of accomplishments, so I better get going. We only have about 25 minutes. here's a snapshot of what you, Kathleen, have accomplished for so many of our wonderful kids out there with sensory challenges. First and foremost, you are a nationally recognized speech-language pathologist with more than 30 years of experience in the public school and private practice settings. You must have seen so much going on and trends happening with our kids out there. Your mission, based on what I've read in your blog, is to educate as many people as you can about this sensory disorder, and that's a goal that we both share. And your experience with sensory issues runs deep, and your passion definitely runs strong. You founded the first sensory integration clinic in Dallas, where you are, as well as the Pediatric Network Foundation, establishing the first and only preschool in Dallas for children with sensory issues, and we've got to talk about that. You've also presented and are still presenting workshops on child development and sensory integration. You've been doing that for 25 years, and they're filled with great information. I was happy to see you present your workshop here in Baltimore. And that included interesting perspectives from your experience with educating orphanages abroad about sensory issues that arise from deprivation. You are the founder and publisher of SI Focus magazine, the only magazine dedicated to sensory integration with readers in 17 countries. And the magazine is in its fifth year and going strong. And I remember when the first issue came out.
I know, Ida. You have been a wonderful, wonderful supporter. It was so good to see you when I was up in your neighborhood last year.
Yeah, what's funny, Kathleen, is that the station that we're on right now is in Lowell, Massachusetts. And I'm in Baltimore, Maryland. And where are you?
I'm in Dallas, Texas.
We are just quite the spanning group of girls, aren't we?
I know. It's fabulous.
Well, thank you for everything that you do. And there are so many questions I have. This is one that a lot of people have been asking lately, and it's a quick one to answer. You know, you're a speech-language pathologist, and typically people who are occupational therapists work with kids with sensory challenges.
Right.
I absolutely adore that you are an SLP and work with kids with sensory issues. Not only work with them, but teach their adults about sensory issues. How did you get involved working on the sensory side?
Well, I was in private practice for 8 years, a solo private practice as a speech pathologist, and I actually had a mom who I was working with her nonverbal son, and she was being relocated with her husband out to California. And I told her, as soon as you get out there, I want you to get back into speech once you get your home settled. And she said, oh, I definitely will. And within a couple of months, I got this letter from her saying, oh, my goodness, Kathleen, do you know what's going on in California? Which, of course, I didn't. Mm-hmm. And she said, I not only have my son in speech therapy, but we're also getting occupational therapy with something called sensory integration. And I read it twice in her letter, had never heard of it. So started doing some research, couldn't find anything that, going on in Dallas, and went to visit Jane Kumar's clinic up in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Learned more about what started in California with Jean Ayers. Mm-hmm. And so I opened a multidisciplinary clinic, the first one in Dallas, with a sensory approach. And from there, just did lots of continuing education, as well as being fortunate enough to find a couple of therapists that had been trained in sensory in the Dallas area. Betty McBride and Lee Manny being two who helped educate me. And so I don't want to mislead people. I do not treat children for sensory issues, but as a speech pathologist have used sensory-based intervention.
Right.
And so my speech addresses it from a sensory standpoint. That's one thing I talk about in my workshops. But I certainly do not treat. That is left to our OTs and many physical therapists as well now that are trained for that.
Oh, it's so important, I think, for everyone who works with kids to understand sensory integration theory, because with a little bit here and a little bit here, they can make their own therapy sessions even that more productive. Coming up in the summer of 2010, ASHA, the American Speech Language Hearing Association, which you are very involved with, runs their conferences. And with my fingers crossed, I'm hoping that they choose to have Diana Henry, a wonderful OT, come out and do some sensory training for their schools as speech-language pathologists. I think that adding a little bit of sensory here and there would just benefit so many more kids and see them blossom faster in their therapy. So thank you for coming over to the sensory side.
Well, it was certainly an enlightenment to me and truly changed the way I practiced as a speech pathologist. Once I understood the vestibular system, which has to do with movement in the brain and how that is really linked with the speech and language portions of the brain, once I started doing that, we saw tremendous improvement in our children, and they would move much faster, and really was a huge turning point for me as a speech pathologist. And so I try to pass that along to people in our workshop. We have a varied audience. It's not just OTPT and speech, but mm-hmm. Psychologists, social workers. And, sensory is not the answer for everyone, but it is a huge part for many, because you don't have to have major sensory deficits to still benefit from some of those practices, because we're all sensory beings.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As Winnie Dunn puts it in her wonderful book, Living Sensationally,
yes.
We all have sensory preferences.
We do.
And I love how you mentioned vestibular. That's our favorite here at home. In the Zelaya family, we do have a graduated child from vestibular under-responsiveness, and he just loves to spin like a top all over the place and never get dizzy. The day he got dizzy was the day that I just thanked Lord above, because, most people, looked at him and said, what? You're spinning and you're not getting dizzy? And then the day he got dizzy, I knew it clicked. So say, for example, for a child like my spinning top, in as a speech pathologist using some sensory tools, what one thing would you help a child with some vestibular, issues?
Well, if they presented with significant vestibular issues, I would probably not go forward with speech immediately, but get a good occupational therapist to look at them, do an evaluation, and perhaps address those issues first.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you can do is, if a child qualifies for OT in speech, is if they're in a setting where it's possible, is to go ahead and get the occupational therapy intervention first, mm-hmm. and then follow that with their speech. It gets that brain primed and ready to go. And then whenever possible, if an OT and speech pathologist can treat together, that is a huge benefit. If you're in a setting where you're just receiving speech, You know, having something simple like a sit and spin or a dizzy disc, which is a way that a child, if they need it, can get some vestibular input before or during even the speech session. Perhaps if you have suspended equipment, getting them in a net swing so they're getting that constant movement while you're doing intervention. There are lots of different ways, but I want to stress here, because we may have some listeners that this is brand new for them.
Yep.
And I always try to stress to my audiences, you never, ever impose input on an individual system. Not really something that we do to or for a child, but we make it available to them. So that offering them a sit and spin, something as suspended equipment, is something that's made available to them that they can get the input that they need.
Oh, sure. Now, you know, speaking of brand new listeners and brand new people to sensory issues, can you just take us a step back and give us a synopsis of the history of sensory processing disorder? You know, going back to Jean Ayers and all the way through to our wonderful Lucy Miller and SPD Foundation. We have some time for that. I think that's really important.
Okay. Let me try to do it very quickly. Of course, Jean Ayers started her work at the University of Southern California. She had a degree in occupational therapy and psychology as well. She did a lot of research on the brain and really focused in the beginning with children with learning disabilities. However, sensory issues coexist with a multitude of diagnoses, such as cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, ADHD, ADD, learning disabilities, a number. It's not always a standalone diagnosis. However, her work was based on the label that they were using was sensory integration disorder, and that is certainly still used today.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's been some concern that we can't always get reimbursement for parents or insurance companies, and a desire to help educate and break this down a little bit better. So in 2004, Dr. Lucy Jane Miller, she is our primary researcher in this country on sensory issues. She studied under Jean Ayers and is out in Denver, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
She put together a work group, which was Jane Kumar, Marie-Anne Salone, Sharon Cermak, a number of OTs, along with some other professionals, but they came up with a new terminology, sensory processing disorder. Not consistent with Jean Ayers, because she did talk about sensory processing, but the goal was to come up with a new label because Dr. Miller has tried for years to get this accepted in the DSM
classification,
which is coming up,
yes.
The next one in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So she's done a great deal, about 30 years of research, and she will be presenting in 2010 to the DSM panel with the term sensory process disorder. Now, along with that, they also developed a complete taxonomy, if you will, a breakdown classification of sensory processing disorder. And that's one thing I go over in my workshops to help people understand. You know, it's one thing maybe a teacher will get a child from a previous teacher and they'll say, this particular child has sensory integration disorder deficits or sensory processing, but that doesn't tell them a great deal. So Dr. Miller's work group actually broke it down to help people understand when children are over-responsive, under-responsive, seeking, if they have motor disorders, if they have discrimination. So it's really evolving to be a little bit more detailed, and we'll see if it will be accepted in the DSM.
We are working so hard to support that effort, aren't we, Kathleen?
And let me just say that anyone that has interest in this would be fabulous. You can Google, if you're on the internet, SPDFoundation.net. They are in desperate need of donations. Anything at all would help. And Dr. Miller has a fabulous symposium in Chicago next week. I'll be going. I hope you'll be there.
Oh.
A number of people will be. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking in Chicago as well on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Excellent.
But then on Thursday, there's a pre-conference institute. And then Friday and Saturday, a number of workshops. So if they just go to the spdfoundation.net, they can get lots of information. And any donations would be helpful towards this effort.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm so happy that you shared so much information about SPD Foundation, because they really are the cornerstone of this entire effort to get SPD to become a real official diagnosis. The term is spreading, and I keep reminding Lucy of that. She gets frustrated a lot because things just aren't moving as fast as she wants, but, you know, they are moving in the right direction, and more people are using SPD instead of SID for sensory integration dysfunction, and that warms her heart. So every while now and then I send her a little love note to remind her, because we all need that kind of support.
Yes.
What's really fabulous is that SPD Foundation is sponsoring a wonderful worldwide event during National Sensory Awareness Month. They're called Showtime, Sensory Showtime events, and they're to help raise awareness, which you are so good at, and to raise some funds to help with this effort, because Lucy is so close to getting SPD into the DSM. So good luck with that, and that would mean, what does that mean for everyone? That there will be an official diagnosis and financial help from insurance companies. So, yay, let's go
that
for that effort.
Goal. I would add here that if people would go to her site, there's also a way to connect to some parent support groups that's available there.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone would like help in their community through the magazine, SIFocus, we have a complete packet that I can email anyone, and we have 300 new volunteers that have joined this year. We have over 600 volunteers across the country and in several other countries working on National Sensory Awareness Month. So if they would just email me, if I could give that out, please.
Oh, please do.
Just awareness@sifocus.com, and just say, please send me a packet, and I will send them. We have press releases in there. We have checklists. We have things they can give out on National Sensory Awareness Day, which is actually October 31st every year.
Mm-hmm.
And we have things that will help educate their immediate community to raise awareness.
Oh, that is so wonderful. And you started the National Sensory Awareness Day. Was this about 5 years ago?
Yes. This is our fifth year. It was a day, then it was a week, and now it's a month.
It's a month, and you know what? It should be every day, don't you think? That we all should raise awareness about this hidden disorder that
Absolutely.
So many of us have. There's this recent study that was just shared that one out of six children have over-responsiveness to either tactile or auditory stimulation. Those are the jittery kids who are always in fight or flight, the ones who don't like to be touched, don't like the sound. We all know a child like that. And it used to be there was 1 in 20. So awareness is being raised. Help is out there through SPD Foundation, through you, through all of these parent support groups and websites that are popping up every day to support this effort. It's a wonderful community awareness-raising process that's going on. Now, National Sensory Awareness Month started with the day, which is October 31st. Can you share us, this is a common question that people in my support group share with me, why October 31st for the beginning of National Sensory Awareness Month?
Well, that's a good question. I get that one a lot, too. I just find fall, but particularly around Halloween, not everyone celebrates or participates in Halloween, but towards middle to late October, usually around our country, we have fall festivals, harvest time. There are a lot of church activities and things related just to celebrating fall in general. But particularly on Halloween, children are out typically door to door. And so in our packet, we have this little handout. There's 3 to 8.5 by 11 size sheets, so you can copy them, cut them up. And as you give perhaps candy or something for a little one who comes to your door, just tuck that little note in there. Or if your child is out and about in their neighborhood and someone puts a little piece of candy in their little Halloween bag, they can hand it to the person, and who's going to refuse something that a child gives you at the door? And the thought being is, when the children get home, mom and dad go through their little baskets to make sure everything's safe, they'll find a little piece of paper, and it will describe what sensory issues look like. And it may be that they'll say, oh my goodness, my child has some of those indicators and I didn't know anyone else did. And so it refers them to some place that they can get help. It's a way for our little children to be ambassadors at doors across our country.
Oh, how fabulous. And now, what was the impetus for you to start this wonderful awareness program?
A light bulb went off in my head. You know, I can't credit anything in particular except there's certainly autism awareness and so many other things. And I thought, you know, if we really want to raise awareness, and this was right after I started the magazine, I have a national, international voice here. Let's use that to help promote some kind of network. Now, I've been asked, why don't we have a huge event? Why don't you have a rally in Washington?
Yeah.
Why don't you rent a big auditorium and have people? Well, that's not the approach I wanted to take. I want this to be grassroots, and I want it to help people in their immediate community. If you lived in Alabama and went to Washington, D.C., you could go rah-rah, but you'd go back to Alabama in your small town, and there you'd be by yourself. So the purpose is to help people, to equip them with something that will make an impact in their immediate community, their school, their neighborhood, their own family.
Oh, gosh, and it will spread. It will totally spread.
Has.
Oh, I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I said it really has.
Oh, it has. What's really wonderful, just digressing for a moment, is the name of my company, Sensory Street, is along those same lines as your focus for national, for Sensory Awareness Month. It's small. Stay in the neighborhood. Stay small.
Uh-huh.
And let it move on. You know, let it move from there. Because we can try to reach out to everyone, but my issues are not the same as your issues, or not the same as his or theirs. And my environment is different than yours.
Exactly.
Washington, D.C. is a pretty happening and busy place, but back in Alabama, in that small town, it's a different environment. So the people, the therapists in Alabama would treat the kids a little differently maybe than in D.C. because the environments are different. So
they're very different. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. The lifestyle is very different. And everything related to sensory issues is related to the environment that the child lives in, their own home, their own school, and whether they're on a bus to go, whether they walk to school, whether they're in a car, whether they go on the subway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone's environment is different.
And their language is different.
Mm.
You know, so as a speech language pathologist, you know, to help them out, you work with the language of the area. You work with the sensory needs of the area. So I absolutely love the small grassroots effort. So hooray to you. Wonderful. Oh, we could talk forever. There's so much wonderful things on your plate. And if that wasn't enough to coordinate all of that, you do speak around the country on sensory issues, which is so wonderful. And you are the founder and the publisher of SI Focus Magazine. We have mentioned that in the interview, and I want to plug the web address. It's www.sisintegrationfocus.com. The magazine has grown to be an incredibly wonderful resource for not only people in the business, but for the moms out there, or the teachers, or the grandparents who just need to understand. We have a lot of mutual friends who have written for the magazine, and I want to give silent shouts out to everybody who's contributed. Thank you for raising awareness. So now, here we have an amazing speech-language pathologist who sees that there's a sensory side to everything, and you just don't want to communicate on a small scale. You know, although a grassroots effort is the way to go, but you want that effort to expand big time. And so you don't just, stand on a corner and say, sensory processing disorder. You do things in a big way. You've got this National Sensory Awareness Month. You have SI Focus magazine. And you also have a blog, which I came across the other day. And I want to give the...
Oh, Ida, please.
Yeah?
You don't know. Don't mention my blog.
Okay.
Because I have gotten so busy, it's sort of fallen by the wayside.
Well,
I don't tweet, I don't Facebook, and now my blog is it's on retreat itself right now. What I do want to mention very quickly, Future Horizons has contacted me, a marvelous publisher.
Yeah.
They've been known in the autism world, but now they're entering the sensory world as well.
Yeah.
And they've asked me to compile some, because not everyone has gotten the magazine over the last 5 years. I have a book coming out in 2010 called Insights into Sensory Issues for Professionals. And anyone who wants to come to my site, I'll have information when that's available, because the magazine doesn't just focus on family issues, but definitely professionals as well. So Insights for Sensory Issues for Professionals will be coming out next year.
Oh, how fabulous. I would love to see just a note about that on your website, so everybody could take a look. I will definitely make sure I put that on my list of things to buy. I'm so excited because you've accumulated so much great information about this topic just from your magazine alone, let alone all of the experience that you've had out there. One wonderful last shout-out to Kathleen Morris is that you've worked with orphanages abroad teaching about sensory issues. That can come up from, deprivation in those orphanages out there. And now you've been working with adoptive families here to help them with, to teach them about sensory issues. Is that something that you still have on your plate?
I do from time to time. I don't have anything scheduled right now. I usually do it here in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to Russia, Romania, and Bulgaria. And so many wonderful people in this country are adopting international children. And so I try to help them with, first of all, how do we get them from there to here on the plane? And many of these children are, of course, at risk for sensory issues. So some of my speaking is related to how do you get them home, what do you do to provide that plane trip, and then what do you do when you bring them home. But I don't have it scheduled right now.
Hey, thank you, gals. It's Lisa. You gals were awesome. I'm so sorry that the time... Oh, my gosh. You gals were so fantastic. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ida.
Hi. Both of you were great. And Ida, I just want to let everyone know that you'll be doing several more interviews coming up in October, and we'll be talking about that. And I'm so excited. You gals were fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Kathleen. Bye.